Welcome to Atomic Moms, a modern parenting podcast about the joys and complexities of caring for our children and ourselves. I'm Ellie Noss, and each week we celebrate and commiserate with best-selling authors, like today, parenting experts and moms around the world. I have a very, very special guest today, New York Times best-selling author Jancy Dunn. She's a frequent contributor to the New York Times, Vogue, O, which is the Oprah magazine, and Parents. She lives in Brooklyn with her husband and daughter, and her brand spanking new book, How to Not Hate Your Husband After Kids, is published by Little Brown & Company. It's described as part memoir of discovery, part parenting and marriage how-to, and part intriguing exploration of science that explains why we behave the way we do. This book is for every woman who has screamed at her husband because he hasn't emptied the diaper genie, which is now the size of a Burmese python, which is to say, it's a book for all of us. And Jancy, I have to agree with that description wholeheartedly. So thank you for writing this book, and thanks for coming on Atomic Moms.
Oh, it is my pleasure. It's so exciting to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So my first question to you is, as a writer, I imagine that everyone is always asking you about your next project. And so can you fill us in on, like, what was the response you would get from men, you know, in general, and then your husband's friends in particular, when you would say, oh, I'm writing a book called How Not to Hate Your Husband After Kids?
They would. Okay, that's a good question. Mostly they would say, oh, my wife needs to read this. Or, you know, I mean, one friend of mine said, oh, I won't name the wife, but blank and I didn't talk for 2 years after our twins were born. And I thought, what? You didn't? Like, I had no idea at the time. They seemed fine to me. But then again, to me, I don't know about you, but everyone seems fine to me. You go on Instagram, you know, and baby, you know, hashtag so blessed. And everybody seems like they're together, except me is kind of how I felt. But they mostly, you know, they get a little wary and squinty and defensive, which I understand. Mm-hmm. And I think they think that it's just going to be this, you know, takedown of my husband.
Right.
And I'm bracing myself. I know that I'm going to get knocked about that by men who haven't read the book when I wrote it because I didn't want to be mad at the guy all the time. And he's a good guy, you know.
Yeah. Tom seems pretty dreamy.
Yeah, he's a lovely guy. I mean, you know, I liked him enough to have him impregnate me, right? And he was just clueless, kind of. And so, you know, depends on the guy, but
right.
Some are a little like, what's up with that? And one dad at pickup said, wow, that's really obnoxious. And I know I need like a good kind of snappy line back, but I don't really have one yet. I need one, don't I?
Well, but you're really good at snappy comebacks, and everyone needs to read this book because you're so funny, and then also read all your other essays and your other books. But I will say that when I always feel very special when I get the galley copies coming to my house. It makes me feel like I have an important job. I like free things, and your book was on our stairs before, because I just dump everything on the stairs, which we can talk about.
I like you already.
Later yes. In the book, you talk about organization issues. So I had the book on the stairs ready to go up for bedtime reading, and my husband saw it. And I thought, you know, the cover of the book is so poppy and cute, and like this is a theme that comes up again and again on Atomic Moms. And I was surprised that my husband, who is a comedy screenwriter, was taken aback. He got defensive about it. He got defensive. And it was a funny moment because we're in a really good place, and he's been on the podcast a bunch of times, so all our listeners like know all of our drama. But he got defensive, and I was like, well, this isn't about you, and this is about relationships. And a lot of people have these issues. A ton of mothers do, and it's important to talk about. And then, of course, because I hadn't read your book yet and, you know, wasn't fully utilizing all of my my interpersonal skills yet, I said, well, you know, you can get self-righteous about this, and I can get self-righteous about all the sexism in sitcoms, because he writes for sitcoms. And I was like, And then I read your book and I was like, oh, maybe I could have like done some mirroring and done some better listening. Because when you read the book, you give all these tips from all these crazy experts. This is about how to be more loving, how to be more grounded in your relationship, how to sustain it with all of the craziness that comes our way, and also how to be a better parent. So he's going to get a schooling when he comes home tonight.
But I mean, I take his point because you see the word hate, which, you know, I mean, there was some debate, you know, about that word because it does give you the wrong impression. And also, you know, I really, you know, you can sort of get trapped in this kind of complaining mode. And I realized I was doing it on the playground. Like I write kind of frantically during the day from 9 to 3 while my 7-year-old daughter is at school. And then afterwards I go to the playground and I'm just a mom. And not just a mom. I didn't mean merely a mom.
No, be careful. You know, no, don't worry. Atomic Moms listeners are amazing and they're not, there's no,
I know.
No sanctum mommies.
And going back to, you know, that you had gotten an early galley of the book, everyone was like, we have to get Ellie. I mean, you are a priority. So
oh, that's so nice of you to say. Just keep saying it again and again. I really need help.
Me too. Don't we all? And so, you know, I had fallen into this trap where I had complained about my husband, Tom, and it became this sort of self-reinforcing thing where every time he screwed up, it kind of reinforced that, oh, he isn't helping me. And I was beginning to get blinded to all the great stuff that he does. He's a great dad. He's a great husband in so many ways. And so I kind of, you know, I did write it to sort of say like, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? Because you can go your whole life and complain about the guy. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of fun to do in a light way.
Right.
But I heard a lot of frustration. So
what was the most common irritant shared among the new mothers on the playground regarding their partners?
It was a kind of a lack of awareness that the women needed help. I mean, you know, a classic thing, and this still sometimes happens, is I'll be an octopus in the kitchen doing 50 things. I'll be cooking dinner and checking the kids' homework and emptying the dishwasher and, you know, and arranging FaceTime with Nana, you know, and Tom will get up, weave between me, sort of go around me and reach into the fridge and get some wine, pour himself a glass, get himself a little bowl of nuts, you know, maybe some corn chips, and then head back to where he was and sit down on the couch. And, you know, that's what I heard time and time again. And I really do think it's when you're around women a lot, they really instinctively help you all the time. I mean, isn't it so lovely, like, when a woman who's a stranger helps you? Like, I've had women sort of like pick up my kid's jacket when she was a toddler and put it back on her when I'm struggling with a bunch of bags or, you know, people just, and moms, I wrote about it in the book. I remember my daughter, Sylvie, was running towards me once. She had bloodied her knee on the playground. Moms are all talking about something. One gets out a Band-Aid, the other gets out a lollipop, the other has a Kleenex for Sylvie, like, and they're still talking. Like, somehow they're, it's like this hand-eye coordination where they're not even, and so I got used to that. And that's what I heard over and over is like, he just doesn't see that I need help. I mean, another classic one, my father does this too. And now I've married my dad. It's, that's kind of, it seems icky, but.
No, like, I have as well.
Right? Like
the good. By the way, your husband and my dad need to go on these crazy cycling trips together because my dad always does the stage of the Tour de France.
No, he does. Does he really?
Yeah. Yeah. All the time. And then in this July, when we're having our baby, my dad keeps telling my husband, who also cycles, because you listeners, you know, get the book and you can know what we're talking about, that.
So, yeah, it's
because
it's
her husband is a big cyclist. And so my dad is trying to convince my husband to go to Italy to go cycling 3 weeks before my due date. I'm like, no. But anyway, so you married your father. Go on.
But then we have to come back to your husband's cycling. We'll get to that. Okay, right. Does he shave his legs like your husband does?
Oh, yeah.
Right? Does he use your razor?
No. I use his. I have very low standards. This is why my marriage works. He doesn't expect me to cook. I use his disposable razors. Like,
Maybe that's the secret to a happy marriage,
I think,
right?
It really is. I think low standards on the part of the husband. That's when we got in our fight about the title of your book. I was like, honey, we all know that you should be the one doing this interview with Jancy. Like, we get it. I'm going to stop sidetracking myself. Okay, you married your father.
See, I was getting caught up in what you were saying.
I know, me too.
My father jingles. He's a key jingler. And so 45 minutes into whatever we're doing, he's by the door jingling the keys. And now Tom, my husband, is a key jingler as well. And
oh no,
I mean, again, a classic scenario is like getting our child out the door in the morning to go to school. And I'm a hurricane and I'm packing her lunch and I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And Tom is by the door jingling the keys and saying, you know, why wasn't this done earlier? Instead of need a hand, that golden phrase, need a hand, what can I do? Or just jumping in. Mm-hmm. I mean, what I've said to him and what is a phrase that, you know, a lot of my mom friends are yearning for is, I've got this. Even if they're BSing and they haven't got it, just jump in and say, I've got this, and do what needs to be done. So that was it. But again, my problem was that I was ascribing this sort of, you know, this motive to Tom that didn't really exist. Like, wow, I'm really taking advantage of my wife. Ha ha. You know, and right. It wasn't, he's not like that. He's a nice guy. He just wasn't thinking.
They're oblivious sometimes, yeah. And they're not aware of the big changes. And they might not be aware that we're not as unhappy as we might be. Like, they might think that we want to be doing these things that we don't want to be doing. And I have to give you a virtual hug / high five, because I just took my daughter to Texas for 5 days by myself. And she's a very spirited 3.5-year-old. I'm slightly scared of her. And we made the mistake of catching a late flight back to Los Angeles. And because I was reading your book, I did myself the favor of calling him the second we were in the car. And I said, honey, you have 45 minutes to center yourself, because I'm just going to walk in that door and go straight into the shower. And that's what happened. And it was great. But I was able to ask for what I needed, which was, I'm going to pass her on to you, and I'm going to take a moment, and then I'll be awesome again, I promise.
But then, so you walked in the door, he reached out his arms and took your daughter, and he knew, see, that's very hot.
And
that's
I very stood hot. In the shower my big pregnant belly, and I was like, oh, I made it. And guess what? The hottest thing on earth, he had gone to the grocery store.
No. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He provisioned the household before you got home?
Yeah, after working all weekend on this pilot TV show that he created that he's shooting. Yeah, he's the best ever. I don't know. This is why I go to therapy, to be like, I'm not worthy.
I kind of understand what you're talking about, because, wow.
Yeah.
He was how is he the way that he is? Like, what I mean,
I think it's his parents.
Okay.
I think also maybe because I'm kind of demanding. And so I can't do the passive aggressive thing. I mean, my parents' marriage was totally messed up. And that's why this is also a very important book. But we got to stay on track, because these mothers are listening to me being like, why are you bragging about your husband? We were learning about how not to hate ours.
But I mean, it's very, you know, you are actually circling back, because the fact that you aren't passive aggressive, which is was my specialty. I mean, it really was, like, thinking he could read my mind and fuming and like banging pots and pans around when I was making dinner. Mm-hmm. I like to cook. I like to cook, you know, that's how you and I are different. And, but how did you manage to, so you say that you were kind of clear throughout, like, did you have any sit downs before your daughter was born of,
no,
did you, you know, like, how did you achieve clarity that way? Or is it just like a personality thing with the two of you?
I think it's a personality thing. I mean, we were engaged at 3 months. And so we never had a chance to have like these big blowout fights before we got engaged. And he was always very clear about, you know, how much he loved me. So there were never any games at the beginning, which I think really helped. And now we'll have been married for 10 years. And I think we did have some fights after Sabrina was born. The biggest piece of advice that I can give to soon-to-be dads is, if the wife is breastfeeding, that is not time off for her, because what would happen on, you know, and I Adam will listen to this and he'll be mad at me for sharing it. But, you know, if I'm nursing for 45 minutes and then I come downstairs and then he hops off the couch to be like, oh, great, now we can do this rest of the stuff that needs to be done with the house, which, by the way, yes, awesome that he was helping. But I was angry that he spent 45 minutes doing something fun when he could have just done that, you know, could have finished up everything in the 45 minutes. Like, that's my biggest right. piece of advice is, dads, just know the mom does not consider herself off the clock if she's nursing, even if she's looking at her phone. Yes. She's still nursing. She doesn't want to be, you know, even if she does want to be doing it, she's still like tallying that as mom time.
Totally. That's very good advice. Yes. But you were clear. That's good, yeah. You know, that you, because that was my problem over and over. And I look back and I can't believe that, you know, I really expected him to read my mind. And mm-hmm. I would go from, and this I do hear a lot, is like, I would go from 0 to 60. So I wasn't really being clear about what I wanted. I would just go straight to, I'm doing everything around here, you know, and, right. and like yelling instead of just telling him precisely what I need. And we never had a sit down about divvying up household chores. Like, I really did think, because we had been together for 10 years before we, or 8, 9 years before I had Sylvie. And I just thought everything would evolve organically. I mean, mm-hmm. we never fought. We really didn't. And that sounds annoying. But, and I thought, oh, well, this is going to evolve organically. But like, we really had to start from scratch when the baby came along, because we never had a single conversation about money or do we like, our timeouts are a thing, or like, who's going to get up with the baby, or any of that. So it was all about decorating the baby's room. I cannot even tell you the hours we put in talking about, like, you know, chicks or bunnies on the right. crib sheets, but because that's the fun stuff. But we didn't talk about anything else. Who would stay home with the baby when, you know, she got sick, or any of it. And right. I can't believe how naive I was. You know, you have to talk. And now this is so unsexy. But we have meetings every Saturday, because I've interviewed, you know, we did all these couples counselors mm-hmm. and time management experts, neuroscientists, evolutionary biologists. But, you know, experts would say, like, clarity, 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 you know, because the fights arise when there's ambiguity, when you don't know what your role is, or when you do the classic thing of who deserves to sleep in more, who deserves to have a Saturday morning more, you know, and you just... Everything yeah. should be as organized as possible, as unsexy as that is.
No, you know? I'm getting a little nervous now. Like, I should probably let my husband sleep in a little more. Like, we're going to do this interview and I'm going to feel great. And then in like 5 years, I'm going to do an Atomic Moms episode where I'm like, so Adam finally had his meltdown. Because right now there's a pile. I mean, it's clean clothes, but there's a pile of his clothes on his side of the bed to put away when he's done with his very important job. I'm really glad that it's 2017, because I just wouldn't have caught it in earlier generations. I would have been the crazy aunt in Paris, but, you know, like, I would have been single for sure.
But I mean, like, so, but it is divvied up your yes. household chores, right?
Yes. I mean, and there's things that he prefers to do, like you say in the book.
Right.
I do notice that my things fall back. I have to fall back a little bit. Because I'm pregnant and I'm tired and I can't be as ambitious as I'd like to be right. because I know that I end up super stressed out. And so he spends all of his time working when he's not with Sabrina. Like, he's totally let friendships go. I also appreciate that you talk about that in your book, that, you know, men find that their, you know, their partner and then their child are most important, whereas, like, women, we're like, ooh, how many people can we fit in our inner circle?
Yeah, how about that? Wasn't that interesting yeah. to read about? Like, yeah.
I get it. Because, man, this morning I was like, Adam, Jancy's husband is also a cyclist, and I think we'd all be really good friends. And he's like, he said, I don't have friends.
I don't have friends. Did he, what was his tone of voice when he said it? Was it like a matter of fact, or was it mournful, or?
It was like, I'm really, really busy working really, really hard. And doing my part for this family.
Right. Well, cycle. Okay. So he does long distance cycling, presumably, because Tom mm-hmm. took it up pretty much when the baby came out of me.
First of all, that would make me so angry. And that feels so much like my father. Like, I don't know how my stepmom raised three children, because, like, my dad would just be gone. I mean, he also went to Mount Everest base camp. So he's crazy pants. So she would have to like do everything. So I don't know how in Brooklyn, especially like how you keep that safe. My big excuse in Los Angeles is like, honey, you're not going to get hit by a car. You are not allowed to ride your bike here.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, I know when you think about like life insurance, don't you? And all this stuff, like I go real dark. I mean, he's got a very big policy because it's dangerous, you know?
It's very dangerous.
But he goes upstate to this town called Piermont, but it's about a 6-hour ride, and you can't text him. He's on the bike, right?
No,
he's
not stop. Adam would not be allowed to do that right now.
Yeah.
But also, all these husbands that golf all day on Saturday or Sunday, and I'm like, what is that?
Bye-bye day.
Forget
it. No, and, you know, I have friends that they feel the stay-at-home moms. I mean, I have so many friends who are stay-at-home moms, and then their husbands would say, like, I've been working all week. I need the weekend to recharge. Like, you have to do everything. And I would say to them, like, but, you know, even union rules, you get a 30-minute break. I mean, you can't, like, if the women don't get a break ever, then they're working 7 days a week. It is work.
And some of it is so mindless. Like, I just want to, you know, really press that point. Like, so, it is can be so boring.
Right. I mean, I know it's lovely and wonderful, but like, I can remember especially when my daughter was, what, like 6 months? And I would think like, oh my God, it's been 1:15 for like 6 hours. Like the clock is not moving. Uh-huh. Isn't it bizarre? What was so far, I know Sabrina's 3.5, but like what's been the hardest age? Because I was thinking
you're
about
so funny. I feel like Adam's mother is interviewing me right now. Like this is what she does. I never get anything out of her in real life. Uh-huh. And it's all questions back at me. Sorry, what was your question?
Oh, the hardest so far stretch of time, the most challenging, I guess. Because for me, it was definitely newborn. It was newborn for sure.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's it's just too hard. Well, it was newborn for me also because my husband was working on a show and called Undateable. And it was really fun. And he was gone all the time and his hours were crazy and he'd come home at 2 a.m, but he would do the night feed, which was so sweet because he'd come home at 2 a.m, he'd do the night feed and then he'd get like 4 hours of sleep and he'd go back to work. That was the hardest. It's really hard, but we talk all the time and here's the trick. Ready?
Yes.
And I think you're going to totally agree with me on this one. So doing this podcast for 2 years and subconsciously all of that work has totally been infused in my marriage. And then when I was reading your book, and you know, I'm laughing about how you interview an FBI hostage negotiator.
Yes.
About like how to communicate with your husband and get what you want. And I kept thinking like, this is so relevant for our children, right? And so that's the trick. Like when moms, you read this book, which you will, you're going to get all of these great tools for your partnership, but then also you can totally use them on your children because it's about, you know, mirroring. It's about listening. It's about empathizing and it's about being clear and direct, right? So it's all these same skills. So I just took it from the stuff I was reading about kids and applied it to my marriage and you're doing the marriage thing and then we can apply it to our kids.
That's an interesting point. You absolutely can. And listening is a skill, isn't it? I mean, you know,
what'd you say?
I'm kidding. And you know, I did you say I stepped right into it? I was being all earnest. I was like gearing up for my big earnest speech.
Sorry, go for it.
This guy, you know, this FBI negotiator, and I got the idea. I was at the gym. I do the same thing. You're very fit. I do the same thing every day, which is the elliptical, which is ridiculous. Like you need to switch it up. I know this. I write about fitness for Vogue magazine, right? I should know this. So I see this hostage crisis unfold on TV.
Oh,
and I was momentarily, you know, annoyed that I wasn't watching Dr. Phil, which I time, you know. This is another thing. If you're on the elliptical and you can read a book with your reading glasses on, are you going too slow? I already know the answer. right? Like you should be sweating so much that your reading glasses slip down your face. Mm-hmm. Number one. Number two, maybe not reading a book. Maybe you should like, right?
But that's why you watch Dr. Phil, because then that can get your heart rate up when people are like yelling and stuff, which, by the way, listeners, listen to our episode with Robin McGraw, Dr. Phil's wife. She's amazing. But I agree. And I've been doing the elliptical because I'm pregnant, but just get on the Stairmaster. Just do that for 20 minutes and you're done.
20 minutes. Okay. And what power do you do the 20 minutes? I mean,
try to get your heart rate up to 150.
Okay. All right. For 20 minutes and then I can get off and then I'm done?
I think so. Then just do some light weights and you're done.
Okay. All right. I know. It's time. So I think like, okay. And I watched at this bank that the hostage negotiators came in and they calmed this guy who was waving a gun down, you know, in minutes, and everything was fine. He surrendered the gun, crisis over. And I thought, you know, I just got mad at my husband about something. And I thought, oh, wait a minute, maybe this could work, because I would just blow a gasket. I can tell you there was one instance that made me think, okay, I have to get a hold of my temper. And that is where I am at fault. Like I would just get so angry at him. Mm-hmm. And I know it's also hormones and lack of sleep. And there's so many things that make you crabby. And I have the world's shortest views. Cause I get hallucinatory when I don't get sleep.
Me too.
I mean, it's really right. Like, yeah. Like I need it very much.
And I sob like 7 times a day.
Yes.
Listeners, get excited. Like starting August of this year, start listening to the podcast like religiously. Cause I will be a basket case.
Lots of crying. Okay. Right. What's your actual due date in July?
July 27th, the day before our 10-year wedding anniversary.
Oh boy. Wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, what really set me off, and we had a terrible fight that convinced me that I needed to do something. And it was that I write for a lot of women's magazines. I was interviewing Jennifer Hudson. We're in an apartment in Brooklyn. We're in a converted church. There's an upstairs. And I said to Tom, my husband, look, I have 45 minutes with Jennifer. Just hang out with Sylvie and I'm going to go upstairs, hook up my little tape recorder and do my thing. Okay. And even because I'm controlling, I had a game set up for them, a little snack tray.
You got it. You're the mom, right? Blah. You got to do it.
Take care of business. So I head upstairs. I'm talking to Jennifer. I'm doing the thing. You don't do this, I notice, but I like guffaw like a hyena at even a mild joke, like, oh my God, that's the funniest thing ever. Like, I'm just like going way overboard. And so she's legitimately funny and a lovely person. So we're talking away about Weight Watchers and she's saying banana pudding's the devil. And I'm laughing, you know, hysterically. I hate hearing my voice on these things afterwards. And
oh, me too. And then I have to edit them. Oh boy. Anyway.
Oh God. It's just, and so then my daughter comes upstairs while I'm talking to the Grammy and Academy Award winner, right? And says, boo, boo. And she has to boo. And I said, go, daddy's downstairs. Go to daddy. Boo, boo. Well, in the meantime, I'm going, banana pudding is the devil. Yuck, 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 you know, doing my thing. And I said, go upstairs. Ellie, do you know what I actually did? I'm looking around in a panic. And I see some copy paper because our home office is upstairs. And I'm thinking, okay, what if I put some copy paper down? I just have my kid like take a crap on the copy paper.
Right.
What
you can't leave the conversation. Right? I hear you there. One time I put really fast. One time I was at a park and I didn't want it. This is even worse. And she was saying poo, poo. And I picked her up. And there was no one else at the park. And I'll probably get arrested for this. Stood her on top of the trash can, pulled down her pants, and made her squat. And she pooped in the trash can. So anyway, I'm just saying I hear you. And I think that the paper thing is a, you know, that would have been resourceful.
I was near my landline. So I was like reaching over so I could get one piece of copy paper. I'm thinking, do I wipe her with the cut? Ouch. Wipe her with the copy paper. But okay. You know,
paper cuts.
So then I'm taking right in a very tender area. So then I actually took my shoe and I threw it downstairs. Like, what is he doing? What is he doing? I'm banging on the floor. You know, when you do that, finally I said to Jennifer, can you hold on for just a sec? I couldn't explain to her what was going on. Even though she could probably hear like, poop,
right,
poop.
Right.
It's coming out. My kids said, you know, the dreaded words, it's coming out. I ran downstairs with the child because only I can wipe her. This is another thing. But oh I God. Ran downstairs with the child. And as I'm running to the toilet, like running as fast as I can, I see that Tom, his face is bathed by the glow of his phone, and he's playing computer chess with some dude from the Philippines. He had taken up computer chess also when I had the kid. And he did the thing where he arranged his face into like an important expression, like, you know, like the boss is emailing him or something.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh, that's hilarious, too. Oh, my God. And I also... listeners, you got to read this thing because the way you describe your husband's voice is like an action figure, like having like five just like moat phrases.
Oh, you really did. You read that book thoroughly, even with your drowsiness of being.
I know, even though I was traveling with a maniac.
I have never traveled with a 3-year-old alone on a plane.
You can borrow her anytime. So I would have gone crazy It also gives me hives because it makes me think of that recent BBC interview, right, with the dad?
Yes.
And people were being so judgmental about how he was kind of like shooing the children away. And the funny thing, again, my husband, the angel, was like, why didn't he acknowledge her or just like have her sit on the lap? And I was like, I would have – if I was being interviewed on some serious topic for the BBC, like I don't know what I would have done. But I assure you, it probably would have been like more aggressive than just sort of ignoring the children until my husband came in the room and like whisked them away.
Like 1,000 people forwarded me that because they knew about stories like, you know, the Jennifer Hudson one. I have been there. Sweat was pooling in my bra. It was really bad.
And the other huge thing about that is being an interviewer on the podcast, like the flow is so important. And so when you have to stop and you're like, and not just because it's a celebrity, but if anyone is like getting comfortable and you've got a rapport to be like, oh, I'm going to take a moment so my daughter can go take a crap. And then I'm going to come back and try to like restart this engine. Like that's really difficult.
Where were we? Yeah, I know. It's just like, and you know, so one of the FBI negotiators, points. He said the most important one, you know, they practice something called active listening. And I realized that that's what was missing in the dynamic between me and Tom is that I forced him to paraphrase what I said because, you know, there's this really common pattern. You know, John Gottman talks about it, the famous couples therapist, of that women often, I mean, not always, of course, but often get more and more upset because they want to be heard. And the men shut them down. It's called stonewalling. And that was our classic pattern. Like I would get more and more, you know, I would get a little loud and I would, because I would feel like, don't you hear me? And what he was doing was stonewalling me. He was either ignoring me, looking at his phone, kind of like just grunting a little bit. And of course he could hear me because I was yelling at the time. But that was our bad pattern. And the negotiator said, just paraphrase what she says. Then you have to listen when you paraphrase. You can't BS. Like you have to. You can't make it up. Mm-hmm. And so when Tom would paraphrase, like, okay, so you're upset that you didn't know, I don't know the name of our child's pediatrician. And I would say, yes, it takes the wind out of your sails a little bit, you know? And so that helped a lot. That helped a lot. And mirroring where he would, you know, repeat a little bit of what I said and even tracking, just saying, yep, go on. I hear you. Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. That was totally novel for us. It sounds like I'm saying really obvious things, but like they just weren't obvious to us. I don't know.
No. And to try to loop this back to your elliptical moment with Dr. Phil, you know, you ended up seeing Dr. Phil of the East Coast, as you describe him, Terry Real, who's a couples. So you went to this very expensive and very involved couples therapy session. And he basically calls you out for being verbally abusive. And not basically, he does. He calls you out.
Oh, yes. My hair blew back. He yelled at us. And it's this guy, you know, I write for Oprah magazine. So everyone, you know, at Oprah knows about Terry Real. And he's this guy in Boston. People fly in from all over the country. People who have a decent amount of money, because he's not cheap. He's $800 an hour. And we had a 5-hour session. Let's do the math of what had to come out of my book advance, right? But I thought, like, okay, let me do this so that readers who can't afford him can get something from him, you know, like I'll take the hit. So we went.
And it's great because you're like, I'm doing it for work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, I feel like parenting. I'm figuring out parenting and it's for the podcast. So it's for work. Like,
act right off, you know? And I, you know, we had never gone to a marriage therapist, and I didn't realize how helpful it could be. We had one harrowing day with him, and I thought, how could one day be effective? I mean, we also went to marriage counseling after that, but he, you know, there's something very, kind of bracing and sort of exciting about, like, just dumping out your worst behavior in front of a third party and having them tell you, like, what you're doing wrong. Like, there's, I don't know if I'm masochistic, but, like, we got right down to it, and he was saying, you're verbally abusive. You call your husband names, because my husband doesn't call me names. He crumples up. He just folds when I call him names. I don't do it anymore, mostly because Terry Real yelled at me. Don't you love it? Terry Real. Like, that's his real name.
It's so insane. Totally insane.
First, he said to my husband, this is the 21st century. You get the hell off the couch. Help her out. Who do you think you are? Things should be 50-50. This is not the 50s. You know, you have to help her out. She's going crazy. And then I thought, oh, I kind of like this couple therapy. You know, why didn't I go before? But then the finger that was pointing at Tom headed over to me, and I thought, uh-oh. And he said, you're verbally abusive, and it stops today. And I said, no, I'm venting. He said, no, you're not venting. That's verbal abuse. Look it up. And guess what? It's damaging your daughter. Like, if you think that she doesn't, you know, absorb that, you're wrong. She does. It's collateral damage, and it stops today. And I'm telling you that it stopped today. He shamed us. And also, we don't want to go back there and pay that kind of money again. But, like, it was really great.
By the way, way cheaper than divorce, though, right?
Yeah, well, exactly. Lawyer fees, right? And, you know, I really didn't realize that this is so naive of me, but that our fighting was damaging our kid. I mean, there's these statistics that infants as young as 6 months will react to the angry voices of their parents. You know, these researchers observed measured brain waves, and the infants would stress out. And I can remember Tom and I would even fight over the head of our toddler while we were all watching Curious George, which I find very, very soothing. I love the piano music and stuff. Mm. And
I feel like Curious George, he's totally out of control, that monkey. I don't know. He gives me anxiety.
He might need some ADHD medication, actually. But
like, I hear you with the music.
Music was nice, right? It wasn't that, you know, frantic feeling that some of those cartoons get. But
oh,
we would fight.
PJ Masks is the worst.
Oh, I know. There's some that raise your own cortisol levels, right? Yeah, and you're like, why am I doing this? What? But
you'd fight over her head. Yeah, you'd fight over her head. What? And so what did Terry – I want to share with our listeners the mantra he gave you. And I should also say that, because you were asking me earlier about fighting with Adam, I am so hypersensitive about fighting in front of Sabrina. And I think when children
are – you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And when children are older – I think it's great that they can see the conflict resolution. When I am annoyed with him in front of her, I'll be honest about my feelings and I'll try to stay on topic.
Right.
Because I was raised in sort of I have to be careful because my mom doesn't listen to the podcast, but she has her friends listen to the podcast.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Let's say what we can say.
You know, I feel like I kind of grew up in the Wild West in terms of relationship skills. And there was a lot of, let's just say, arguments didn't stay on topic. And there was a lot of, I could have been in that infant study. How about that? We'll just stay there.
Right.
So I am so hypersensitive to it. Because a lot of mothers are so tired and they're like, well, I love my child all day long and this is between me and my husband and my child's not really paying attention. But you don't know. Like, you think your kid's watching Curious George and they're probably absorbing all your toxicity. So give us the tool that Terry gave you, because it kind of shook me up a little bit.
Oh, I can cry thinking about it now. So he was saying, you know, you have to control your temper. And you know, he had said to me, like, you know, you have to think of your child's perspective. You're yelling at her father. You're not just yelling at your husband. you're yelling at her father, you know, and they start to take sides at around age six, which is when I was writing the book, and she was siding with Tom because I was the one losing my temper. And to her, even though if he would do something wrong, I would yell, she processed it as that I was a jerk and he was being oppressed, you know, and that's what she saw. And you don't want to, first of all, you don't want to involve your kid too much in your arguments anyway. But anyway, he said, you're verbally abusive. And the next time you lose your temper, I want you to take a picture of your daughter, run into the bedroom and shut the door and say to that picture. And he said, are you ready? I said, yeah. I want you to say, I know that what I'm about to do is going to cause you harm. But right now, my anger is more important to me than you are. And I was like, oh God. It was devastating for me. And I thought, exactly right. Like this is, and after that, when I was about to blow my top, I actually did. I had a picture. I did what he said. And I put it in my bedside table and I would run and look at it and say that to the picture. And let me tell you, it stopped me cold. It was a really interesting exercise for me, as was another child psychologist said to me, just a question. Have you ever asked your child what she thinks about your fighting? This was another thing that hadn't occurred to me. Like, why don't I just ask her, like, hey, you know, I mean, I'm just amazed at how clueless I was. So I went in and asked her one day, like honestly, like, wake up. I went in and said, hey, honey, you know, hey, can we talk for a sec? You know, when you go into their room. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, what do you think when Daddy and I fight? And at first she gave a jokey answer, which was, you know, oh, I think it's kind of funny because Daddy looks like Grumpy Cat when you fight. But then she said, I get worried when you two aren't talking to each other and I don't know why. And again, I was like, because of course, you know, I didn't think that she was even paying attention. I thought she was in there, you know, coloring in her coloring books. But of course, we're in a small apartment in Brooklyn. She was absorbing everything. And so my impetus for doing this book, this is how child-centric I am. I thought, like, oh, I'm ruining my kid. Like, I don't want her to, you know, be on Terry Real's couch years from now, you know? And instead, it was just pathetic that my marriage was crumbling, was it kind of a distant second in my mind. Like, you know, she's seven and in 11 years we'll be together again. And why was I neglecting this guy, you know, and why was I not seeing the good things that he did? He does a lot of wonderful things. And I had tunnel vision where I was, you know, like I said before, like, oh yeah, he's not helping me. And that would reinforce instead of seeing what a good person he was. So that was a bit of a wake up call also. Wow, was that a long answer, Ellie? Are you still there?
That's why it's a podcast. That's the best part about long form interviews. Yeah. And it's very helpful. And for listeners that are like, oh my God, I don't want to hear about what we do wrong all the time. I wanted to lay in on my husband. That's what I thought this book was about. You know, when you read it, there are so many tips and for the husband and also, you know, things that you can tease him with. Like, for example, you write, a Cornell study found that couples with young kids who split housework more evenly reported better and more frequent sex than when the women took on most of the chores. And you go on to say that children benefit too in surprising ways. Research has shown that when men share housework and childcare, their kids do better in school and are less likely to see a child psychiatrist or be put on behavioral medication. So I think it's totally fine to start out, if you need to make a big change, it's pretty easy to make the child the priority. It's hard when you're angry at your husband and the mother has these patterns that also she's picked up from her own mother and her mother. You know, what were the expectations when we were growing up? And what my therapist is always saying, like, Ellie, why do you care so much about what other people think? And and we end up putting that on our spouse. Because we think we need to have the dinner ready. He might not care at all.
It's so hard to get away from how you were raised, right? And you know, our parents were a different generation. I mean, things were changing with our parents, and it was certainly different from their parents. But like still, you know, I was raised by a stay-at-home mom. They had very clear roles, and you can't get away from how you were raised. And you're right. Mm-hmm. You're like, you're bringing stuff to the table that may be a priority for you, and you may think, oh, this is the way a family is. but you're right, is totally different from your husband. And it's also interesting about, like, if your kid is the motivator, that's not a bad thing. You're right. Like, I've said to Tom, and this has been very effective, you know, I've talked to this, you know, these child psychologists at Yale, and they were saying, you know, you're modeling the behavior that your child is, your child is forming expectations of what their mate is going to be like when you're older. So you can say anything you want, you know, because I was saying to Tom, like, there's all this girls rule rhetoric that we throw at her. You know, mm-hmm. you can be president someday. And, you know, I'm very careful when I don't critique my body in front of her. You know, we've read the same books, right? About, like, you know, you stand in the mirror and you say, I'm so glad I'm strong and healthy. Like, I really do say stuff like that, you know, mm-hmm. and I ignore the spider veins and all that. And then you
write for Vogue about fillers, but anyway.
Oh, sure. Yeah. We got to get to that too. And, yeah. And she definitely, you know, your deeds are more important than your words. And that's what they see what you do. And I would mm-hmm. say to Tom, like, if you're going to not help me and sit on the couch and play computer chess, our child is internalizing that and forming her own expectation. And do you want her to end up with some dude who's on the couch and doesn't help her? Well, that was his motivation. He would say, like, oh, no. You know, so that did work, and it did improve our marriage. And the impetus was our kid. He doesn't want her to end up with a bum, you know. So,
yeah, no bums allowed. And I completely agree. And I think that's really helpful advice. If they can see the long term effects on their children when they behave this way, it might motivate them to make different choices.
Something. Even my, you know, when I take time out to, like, just go out for half an hour and have a walk, I've said to Tom, you know, she needs to see that, you know, a mom's time is valuable too, and that her personal time is good for her and makes her happy. Like, you know, it's what
she
sees,
huge.
Right? Instead of, like, that you're expected to give and give and give and give and never replenish and never do anything for yourself. So.
Yeah, no, the self-care stuff, is so big to model for them. So we're running out of time, but I definitely have to hit up two more quick things. One is maternal gatekeeping, mm-hmm. because we need to own this big time.
Yes.
So can you explain to our listeners what maternal gatekeeping is? And please tell them to knock it off if they're doing it.
Okay. So that is the process by which women can either open up a gate to encourage fatherly participation, or clang the gate shut and make a father feel incompetent by criticizing what he does. Or, I mean, it's either, like, leaving him out. I've done that where I've been, like, texting with some moms about something going on at school, and Tom will say, oh, what are y'all texting about? And I'll say, oh, nothing. You wouldn't be interested. That's leaving him out, you know? And also, like, if he's dressing your child and you say, like, stripes and plaids, you know, or if he's feeding her or him dinner and you say, where's the vegetable? Like, hello, you know, or even rolling your eyes. That's maternal gatekeeping. That's where you're saying to him, like, I do it better. Why should you even bother? And if a father is hesitant, particularly in those early months when nobody knows what they're doing, that can really put him off, intimidate him, make him feel ill-prepared, and it becomes, again, a self-reinforcing thing where he doesn't want to get in there. And so I had to be really careful. When I started monitoring all the time that I was doing maternal gatekeeping, it was a lot. I mean, you know what's interesting is that a lot of my friends CC their husband, even if they work all day and you never see them, on everything email-related with their kids, like playdate plans or school trip plans. And I thought, well, that's kind of great. I mean, I don't even do that. And I, you know, fashion myself as enlightened after I wrote the book. Like, why wouldn't you see him on everything? You know, it's kind of like, well, encourage him, invite him in. Don't humiliate him. Don't get across that you know better. And that really helped me because I realized I was doing it all the time, even with the eye rolling. Like, and part of that's like control issues, you know. I mean, in some cases, I really could change a diaper more skillfully. Mm-hmm. There was no fecal matter when I was done with that diaper. I mean, you could, you know, perform surgery after. I'm very germophobic. And he did not do perhaps as well of a job, but like, it was still fine. It was still fine. She rarely, rarely got diaper infections. So right. So that is something to be really mindful of. And it certainly changed things for me when I was mindful of that. Did I just repeat myself?
No. The patience thing is so huge because, by the way, we have to practice it with our children anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So we might as well start with the infants because, our partners might not be home much. And so when they are, you've changed 50 diapers already. They don't have the experience. And so, give them the space and the time to do it. Also, step away and let them do it because no one wants to feel like they've got someone breathing down their neck.
Oh, absolutely.
Lastly, is that a word? You also enlisted.
Was that a one word? Was it with lastly as one word or with and then lastly?
Did I say with? Maybe I'll just edit out with and then I'll sound coherent. Lastly, you enlist, lastly on this podcast, enlisted a professional organizer and a consultant for the Fortune 500 companies, Julie Morgenstern. And you also talk in the book about sex and you talk about money. But my favorite part was about organizing because we're in the process of doing a big purge at our house. And
you got a label maker, didn't you?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You're so crazy.
No, I'm a fan. I'm a fan.
I'm very excited about my label.
To be on the show. Okay. Yeah.
So the most important, I think, because this is something that I am trying to do in my own life and I'm always preaching about it, is like being cool with saying no. And this was the best part. You don't have to give a reason why. And we're not talking about with our children, but just like in life with your friends, with your colleagues. If you've got a third birthday party that day, just say no. You can just say no and you don't have to give the reason.
I'm sorry, I can't make it. The end. Stop yourself from giving a reason, right? Like you don't have to say we have swim lessons. We can't, if there's a birthday party, Jason has swim lessons. Don't even say that because the mom might be offended that you're picking swim lessons over their birthday party. Just, I'm so sorry, we can't make it. That is very difficult to just let it sit there, but that was life-changing.
Have you been doing that?
I have. And there's kind of that thing where they kind of look at you like, uh-huh. But then you just move on. You talk about something else. You let that uncomfortable moment hang there for a second. But that's been good because where I got into trouble is babbling excuses.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Totally. And if they don't have kids, they really don't get it anyway.
Yeah. And saying yes to every birthday party. And, if my kid doesn't know the other kid, we don't have to go. But then I was always haunted by, what if the child's waiting at the bouncy? You're haunted by everything? That's fantastic. What if the child is like at the bouncy house and no other children show up? So I felt compelled to go to every single birthday party. What if there's a child with like the party hat on and nobody's there?
Here's a question, Jancy. Did you ever have a birthday like that?
Oh, wow.
Was there ever a moment in your life where you felt like people didn't show up for you?
I remember, it might have been projection. It might have been projecting on my own part. When my child had a third birthday party, there were a lot of missing RSVPs. Like people just didn't bother responding. And I was doing that thing where I was like, I saw that they read the invite. You can see that they read it, on Evite. Like, why didn't they respond? And I remember that really stuck with me for some reason. Like it really brings up all kinds of weird stuff when parents won't respond to your kid's birthday party. Maybe it was like thinking like of my own child, like alone. And she was three. She didn't care, But yeah, no. Why did that happen to you?
No, my dad once dropped me off at a birthday party that he got the time wrong. So it had just ended and everyone was leaving when I showed up, which was humiliating.
Oh, no. Carrying your gift.
Oh, it was humiliating. I mean, and then I have to remember, in second and third grade, everything like that is just so huge.
Yeah, it's like I was there. Yeah, that's.
But so every time it's our own stuff and, we try, we work it out. But that's why your book is so much fun. And that's why I love it. And I'm so excited that I got to talk to you because you have sort of made your life's mission delving into how can you better your life and your relationship, and how can you figure it out? I mean, I love nothing more than talking to experts and other people who have ideas about, like, you know, the how-tos and the hacks for just being a little less insane.
Yes, girl. Exactly. Exactly. You just want peace, you know, and happiness. So, yeah, it's helped. I don't know. I said to Tom, like, don't you want peace and quiet? That's all he wants. And I said, you know, let's try this and then you'll have peace and quiet. And in fact, now we have peace and quiet. It's really, things are much happier now.
So everyone get the book. it just came out. So you'll be very special. And if you have like a touchy husband, get it the Kindle version so he doesn't see the cover. But then I think it's better to get it with the cover so that you can start a dialogue. And so you can find her new book, How Not to Hate Your Husband After Having Kids, you know, everywhere, but also on atomicmoms.com. And if you appreciated some of these subjects today, check out my interview with the Atlantic series. They were called the Ambition Interviews with co-authors Elizabeth Wallace and Hannah Schenck, who are also in New York. And we piggybacked sort of on this theme of, you know, just all the ways that we try and juggle work and home life. See, I'm trying to like tie listeners into like, if you like this one, listen to another one. I've never done that before.
That's good. No, that's good. That's good. You know, no, I like that. I appreciate that.
But more importantly, listen to next week's episode. Go to itunes.com/atomicmoms to subscribe and reach out to us on social media. What's your social media handles? Come on, let's get you some more followers.
Yeah, my website is jancydunn.net. Calm was taken by some Tokyo cosmetics company. And then I'm Jancy Dunn on Twitter. And, you know, I have Instagram and, you know, like that. Jancy.
Actually, I've been really, really having fun, you know, talking to other Atomic Mamas on social media. So hit us up. Hit up our Facebook page. Until next week, trust in your goodness, live out your greatness, rock on, Atomic Moms.